Thanks for listening to the Woodward Podcast Network. Check out more shows by searching for us on Spreaker or wherever you catch your podcasts. The Woodward Podcast Network with Krupka Dental Associates.
Hello, this is Dr. John Krupka from Krupka Dental. We now have the Solea laser. You can have your fillings done without needles nor drills. We are a full-service dental office and always accepting new patients. To learn more about me and my friendly team, visit KrupkaDental.com.
Randy?
Randy, off the internet.
No! No, come on! Leave me alone!
From the Fast Sign Studios, more than fast, more than signs. It's Living the Outdoors with Mark Druitt, presented by Fleet Farm. Be part of the show by calling 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. Now, here's your host, Mark Druitt.
Greetings and welcome to Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druitt. Glad to have you along for the evening. All of our guests here on Living the Outdoors are brought to you by Nemus Southside Market. And you can visit their Facebook page for all of their weekly ads and specials. They are located on Oneida Street. And I'll tell you what, they have the best hand-cut steaks and the best craft beer selection here in the Valley. And if you want to jump in on tonight's conversation, you can call or text us at 920-281-1570 or 866-653-1570. You can also email me at livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. So I'm sure by the introduction of tonight's show, brought to you by Alex, the producer of Living the Outdoors, that Randy Bracktrop is in the studio tonight. And
Randy!
There you go. There's your welcome sign right there, Skippy.
I don't even know what to say when that plays.
It's like a bat signal.
It is. It's the bat signal. It's all hands on deck right now.
I chuckle every time. I love
Randy,
it.
Randy, off the internet.
Oh, yeah.
No! No, come on! Leave me alone!
Come on! Leave me alone! That's awesome.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
Another great show out at Fleet Farm.
That was a lot of fun.
Thanks to Alex and all of our guests out there. That was awesome. And again, thanks to you for joining in. And before we get into tonight's show, I want to throw a shout out to Gunner and all the folks out at Rio Lobo in Wyoming. Have you ever been there?
I have not.
It is by far. I've been in a lot of breweries here in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and I'll tell you what, they've got it really going on out there. It's a working farm. And they brew their own beer, they make their own wine, and they have the best wood-fired pizzas on the earth. And they have specialty ones, and you can order your regular stuff, and just a great atmosphere. No TVs.
Okay.
Outside seating. Great people. It's all family.
What's the name of that again?
Rio Lobo.
All right.
In Wyoming. And I know, Alex, you like beers.
Oh, heck yeah. Oh, gee.
I had some. I was drinking a light amber that was probably one of the best beers I've ever had.
No kidding.
Yeah, honestly.
Sounds great.
Yeah. I would definitely. It's a little bit of a, it's a little, you know, 20, 25 miles. Big deal. Who cares? You know, but it's out in the country. And it's really, really cool.
Got to do it for the experience.
Yeah, they had the young kids out there cleaning tables off and mixing in, mingling with all the customers. Place was packed. You know, and I think they only serve pizzas on Saturday nights, but check out their Facebook page or their website. Yeah, thanks, Gunner. It was absolutely awesome. I loved it.
That sounds great. And yeah. It's not that far.
No, it's on a Saturday. You know, if you take a ride out there for the day, you take the family or you take the wife and you have a glass of wine and a beer and a pizza. And, you know, I was with some friends, a good friend of mine, Steve, and his neighbors. And, you know, we had a few beers and had a pizza and we were good to go.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah. That's good.
Very nice.
You know, speaking of Gunner, I have a Gunner.
A Gunner.
And he's got four legs, and he's got a bad earache right now. And if anybody out there listening has I've got to get him to the vet, but if you got a home remedy for an ear infection type thing for a dog, give us a call tonight. I'd like to hear it because the poor guy is in a little pain.
Is he scratching his ear a lot?
He is. Yeah. Yeah. And he kind of cocks his head and just.
Yeah. And they flap a lot.
Yes. Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm. So if anyone has some kind of a relief for him, that I can kind of concoct when I get home tonight. That would be great.
That would be very helpful. Yeah, my dog would get them frequently because he'd be swimming in, you know, puddles and lakes and marshes and, you know, rivers and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, that water gets in their ear. So we were talking about it before we came on the air. I had my own little arsenal of things,
yep.
You know, gauze and wrap and antibiotics, eye wash. I'll be honest with you, with the two hunting dogs that I had that were my best hunting partners, you know, especially when you're grouse hunting, all kinds of seeds and leaves and dirt, and it gets in their eyes. Just to have that little bottle of eye wash in your in your pack can really make a difference.
My brother-in-law, he used it and swore by it, but just to have a little tube of super glue, because I'll tell you, if they catch a barbed wire fence or something and tear themselves open, it's amazing how that works.
Yeah, it works on pads.
You have used it.
Oh yeah, because they will tear their pads. If you got an upland dog. And they're running through fields and, you know, you get up into the north woods and there are all kinds of prickly, sticky stuff and things that can cut you. I had to stop training him because of the zebra mussels on the lake because they would cut his pads. So I had to not train him in the front yard. I had to seek other areas to work with him for training purposes because they'd be all stuck in there. And Lake Winnebago, as we all know, it's a great, great lake, great fishery, but there's a lot of bacteria in that water.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I can imagine.
That doesn't help either. But hopefully somebody will call us and come up with a home remedy for it.
Yeah, I'd like to hear it. 920-281-1570. And I believe they can text now.
Yes. They can call or text. We've hit the big time here, Alex.
Yes, we have. Send it to the Cease Electronic Talk and Text line. We'd love to hear a remedy for Randy's four-legged pal.
Yes, who has an earache.
Earaches right. Suck. I don't care who
yeah.
you are.
Yeah, if you're human or dog or whatever.
Yeah, it's
painful.
Yeah, they're not fun. Anyway, so when I reached out to you to see if you wanted to come on, obviously, you know, you and I have been going back and forth about our turkey hunting experiences and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I was fortunate early and was fortunate again, which to me, when I texted you, was probably one of the best hunts I've been on, and I've been doing this a long time. And then you texted me and you were successful and you said pretty much the same thing. So I think I said, okay, we got to get together. We got to talk about these stories and how it got to that point. And I'm going to let you kick it off. And I want to hear all about your turkey success.
Well, my turkey success started that night we did the fishing show at Fleet Farm, because I'm not going to lie to you. I was the only one at that table that hadn't gotten a turkey yet this season, and the pressure was immense. It was immense. But you guys were all supportive. You said, we know you can do it. And it's been a lot of years since I had taken a bird. And so I went through my season, hunted as much as I could, not every day, but it got to be Monday night, and Tuesday was my last day. And I'm still trying to debate, do I take the morning off? Should I go? Should I call it a season? But you and the two wardens were still on my shoulders saying, you know what, you didn't get a bird, did you? And did you go? And so I ended up going that morning, on Tuesday morning, my last day of the hunt. Interesting morning, because it was so foggy that morning. It was just pea soup. It was thick. And that was the key part of this whole story is, you know, I got into the woods, I started to move forward, and I heard one fire off quite a ways off in the distance up on a ridge. And so I just kind of kept moving. I moved over so it wouldn't see me, but I'll tell you, that fog was money for me, because every time he'd gobble, I would move up a little bit. He'd gobble. There was no way he could see me through that fog. It was just, you couldn't see, 20 yards, and it was just a blanket. And I moved up a lot farther than I ever would have imagined if it were clear. There'd be no way I could have done it. So what I ended up doing is, at least I wanted to get even with it the best I could. And I was still a couple of hundred yards away, I'm sure. And when I got even with it, I just walked up. I had one hand decoy, and I stuck it in the ground. And as soon as I stuck that hen decoy in the ground, I heard him fly down. And I'm like, oh, gosh. I didn't think he could see me, but something's up because he flew down. Mm-hmm. And but I went and dove back into the brush pile I was sitting by. And suddenly another tom fired up. And he was still in the tree, and he was up by the other one. So I started to call, had him going back and forth. Well, while I'm calling, the one that originally flew down, he never made another sound, but he must have beelined right at me. I had no idea. And I would call softly and fire the other one up. All of a sudden, you see that white head bobbing through the thick brush. You know, it catches you like a flash of light.
Yeah, and exactly.
He come through the brush, and all of a sudden, I just sat tight, and he went behind this big bush. And so I was able to get my gun up, and he was fairly close, 20 yards or so. But he had spotted my decoy. My decoy was probably 10 yards from him. And he wouldn't come out from behind that big bush. And here he was just puffed up like a beach ball back there. And he was strutting around, dancing, strutting. And I just kept there. He's got to come out one side or the other eventually. And he mm-hmm. ended up coming out toward the decoy side. And I let him dance a little bit around, not necessarily by choice. I just didn't have a really great shot. When they're all puffed up like that.
It's a tough one.
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like to usually trigger them to make them gobble or stick their head out, like mm-hmm. we had talked about. And but he had no intention of doing that, none. And I had no intention of waiting for him to walk out of my life either. So
boom.
Yep. Yes. And it looked like I hit a down pillow. Oh, my gosh. He took the full brunt of that load, and yeah, he didn't even flop or flick. He was stoned, done.
Wow.
And it had been a lot of years, so I was really, really grateful for the opportunity, and that was 5 to 6. I shot him at 5:55 in the morning. I mean, that was early. It was just that kind of morning, but the fog was the key there. I don't know if I've shot turkeys when it was clear. I've shot it when it was snowing, but never in that kind of fog. And it was incredible. It was just like raining in the woods, even though it wasn't raining. Everything was so wet, but because they could not see any, you know, that far, mm-hmm. I was able to make the final move to where I was just in the right spot. And that's what allowed me to do it.
Did it seem like those gobbles were a lot louder in the fog?
They sounded different. I don't mm-hmm. know how to explain it, but it was just more, they sounded different.
Well, there's that layer that kind of holds it down.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That thickness. I've been in a situation where I shot one in the fog, and it was the same thing. I could hear him coming, he's coming, he's coming, he's coming. Then he shut up. It's like, it was one of those times when you learn when they shut up, get ready. Because they're more often than not, they're coming. And all of a sudden, you just catch something out of the corner of your eye. And all of a sudden, you know they're there, and you know it's them. But you got to wait for verification to make sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a hen or a Jake, But what size shot were you using?
Six shot.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. What's your preference?
I like sixes in some loads, fives in others.
Okay.
I'm one of those pattern my gun geek guys.
I pattern as well. I think that's important.
Yeah. I still am shooting. I bought two boxes of Federal Flight Control 3-inch number sixes, and I thought I was out of them. I had three left, and I cleaned out my gun cabinet and found a box that actually had another five of them in it. So I've never had to shoot more than one of those shells. It is something about it. I think I actually hit him in the head with the wad because I didn't find any BBs in them. That's fives is a good shot. Extra full turkey choke.
Yep.
And how far was he?
Oh, he was 20 yards, maybe. I mean, maybe a little further. I saw, it was close. It looked close. Like I had the bead on the base of his neck for a while, and it seemed extremely close. But yeah, and I had three shells left, period. I mean, as far as my turkey loads. And it's funny because I was sharing them with my boys too, and now we're down to two, so I got to find those again.
They changed the loads quite a bit now.
Yeah.
And you get on, I get so many of these things that come up, and guys are, talking about this load and that load, and this doesn't work, this works good. You get to that point, you almost have to make an investment. and get something, get a couple boxes and of what you think is going to work best.
Right.
And you've got to get out there with a target.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but all these, so many guys know that they want to shoot 40, they want to shoot 50 yards. No, I want that bird to be close enough I can see steam coming out of his nostrils, you know. That's what makes it exciting. When they get that close,
yeah.
And turkey's vision is at least a minimum of 10 times that of a human. I mean, they can see the slightest movement. And if you're so, you know, well camouflaged and find the right backdrop, that makes a huge difference. Now, they are somewhat distracted, you know, by, you know, wanting to find a girlfriend.
Right.
That will extract, that will.
That made a big difference for me. It was off to the side, so he was more interested in what that styrofoam decoy was doing.
And sometimes, you know, when they come in straight at you, it's like, oh, my God, he's going to see me, you know. And he had a visual. Mm-hmm. So he was focused in on that.
He was locked in on her.
You know, decoys sometimes work really, really well. And I think in your circumstance, I think it's what made the difference.
Absolutely.
In my opinion.
Absolutely.
You know, because now he's not, he was looking, but all of a sudden now he saw it. So he's like, okay, now he's got his attention on that instead of trying to find out where you are.
You could see at the point where he locked in and then he just puffed up and. You know, once he locked in on that visual, then it was,
I loved it. Was he spitting and drumming?
I didn't specifically hear that, but who knows? That was kind of a blur at that point. I was like, it happened so quick. Like they can do, but it was pretty thick in there. And just to see that white head flash through that brush and all of a sudden he was there, I just didn't expect that. But like you said, once I had my gun up, I don't move a muscle because they will catch you. I mean, they literally will catch you blinking sometimes. It's frustrating.
It is, and you have to be cautious, too, because you think they're coming from one way, and all of a sudden now they're on your bad side.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you're a right-handed shooter, you've almost got to prepare yourself to be able to slide a little bit just in case they come from your right.
Yep.
Left side, no problem.
Right.
But all of a sudden now he's over here on your right side and you're going, oh man, you know.
Yeah.
I tried that and tried to switch my gun over to left side and shoot one. Not happening.
No, it's a lot of movement.
You know, I missed them.
Oh,
I mean, I got away with
it.
I got away with it. Yeah. I mean, I was very methodical and just kind of switched over and either he was blind or dumb. One of the two. But you know, there's so many things that play into that.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you get them that close. And that's why we do it, because it is so, it's just so invigorating and gets all the blood pumping and
sure
you
does.
Start breathing hard and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
Well, congratulations to you. That's
you.
Awesome. So how long had it been since you shot one? You said a couple years.
Oh, it's more than a couple. I bet it's been 10 plus.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, when my boys started turkey hunt, it was all about taking them and getting them set up. If we'd have the same weeks, I'd rather, you know, give them the opportunity.
Focus on them. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And that was okay. I'm totally fine with that. I just enjoy to be out there. So now I'm back to just because they're grown and on their own doing this thing. So now it's back to me again.
It's back to taking care of me.
Yeah.
How big did you weigh it? How big was it, do you know?
24 and a half.
24 and a half.
Right on the button.
Big,
I
nice
show you
big
that.
Beard.
It was 9 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
And the spurs, they were just over 3/4 inch. It was just a...
Probably good solid 2-year-old bird.
Yeah, just a big burly bird.
You know, and it's 24 pounds is that's a good size for...
That's a big bird.
You know, for a bird that's got that kind of spurs on it. But they didn't have... they had a lot of opportunity for food all winter.
Oh, sure.
You know, they struggled there for a couple weeks, but a turkey can survive for like... weeks on end with no food and survive, you know, the worst of conditions up in a tree. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's people say, how they survive. I was talking to my cousin last Friday and he's like, yeah, I shot a turkey up here. And he said, you know, it weighed like 16 pounds, 17 pounds. He said it was a big bird, 1 1/4 spurs, 10 inch beard. But he said they have nothing to eat. He said he survives all winter long. You know, makes it to the spring, and I shoot him in the head.
Yeah.
So he said, I haven't shot another turkey since then. Hmm. I'm like, well, okay, that's fine. you know, if that's that's the way you want to do it. But yeah, I mean, the winters are tough on those birds once you get kind of north of Highway 29.
Yeah,
you know, and they have a lot of snow and whatever. But man, they're once the ground clears though, and they can get at stuff, they can put a lot of weight on really, really quick, because they'll find out where that wherever that food is, they'll know where it is.
The deer are doing the same right now. Like, they're out in the middle of the day feeding in fields. Mm-hmm. They're just bulking up. They're trying to restock again. And
get everything going. All right, well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Welcome back to Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm Mark Drew. Randy Brocktrop is joining me here in the studio tonight. If you want to talk to us or chat at us, call or text 920-281-1570 or 866-653-1570. We'd love to hear from you. Or you can email me at livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com, and I will try and get your question answered for you. So I got my email pulled up here, and John Jordan sends me all these cool stuff all the time. he's on top of it all the time. I don't know where he finds all this stuff, but it's like a lot of it is so cool.
Guy.
Yeah,
he's
it's awesome. So, John, thanks for sending all these emails to me about all these fun things like Bear One, Bull Moose goes Canadian cliff diving, and don't fish with guns. All kinds of fun stuff. It's great reading material, anyway. But we're here talking a little bit of turkey. So that must have been hard to describe. You know, especially after you've had a drought of not shooting a turkey and then going up and putting your hands on them. I mean, that's a pretty cool feeling.
It was taking a huge weight off my back there. Yeah, it felt great. I'd forgotten what that turkey feeling was anymore, but it's just as good as it always was, and it was fun.
Yeah, just nice to have that feeling again.
Yeah, and you know, since we did the fishing show, you've been out again.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did get a chance to get out, and this time it was all public. You know, the first one I shot, my good friend Steve Jordan, he lets me hunt on a friend of his property, and I'm extremely grateful for that. And the cool thing about that one is that I actually, the Rambo bike is now officially a turkey hauler. So I loaded them all up with all my gear and everything on the bike, and out I came. That was pretty cool to do that anyway. But if you go out towards like Rush Lake and that area, there's all kinds of federal lands out there that are open to hunting. And you just have to do a little bit of homework. You have to do a lot of legwork and get out there and explore some of these properties. And my experience has been that not a lot of people hunt them, or if they do, they don't do it the right way. So I took a day and I went to one of my favorite spots that I like to duck hunt, and had seen turkeys in there, turkey sign. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to give it a try. So I get out there, get set up, and I got three toms going off. One to my left on private ground, and two of them were way across, probably a quarter mile away.
Oh.
And couldn't get anything to budge. And of course, when I make the decision to like, okay, I'm going to move. Well, now the one tom that was to my left is now in the field and takes off. So I sat for a little bit longer and I'm like, okay, I'm going to call it quits. The bird stopped gobbling and I wasn't going to start moving around there and ruin it for the next day. So I got out and went and investigated another small piece of property. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go check this out because I'm always interested. Scouting is the key. Mm-hmm. You got to get, you just have to get out and check these things out. What are my access points? How difficult is it going to be to get in there in the dark? And so I checked this place out and, driving down the road and here's this big tom standing on private land in a waste grain field. And he's got a hen with him and boom, they take off and they run over to this public property. So I'm like, okay. And I get my binoculars out and I start looking around. I'm like, okay, I can get here. It's got all kinds of creeks and stuff running through it to get across. It was marshy. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to come back in here and tomorrow morning and I'm going to get after this bird. And I got home and I said to my wife, I'm going to kill that bird tomorrow. She's like, really? I go, I'm going to kill that bird tomorrow. And so got up the next morning, packed up all my stuff with a little, I mean, I probably had to walk 300-400 yards to get in there through mushy stuff. And but what I had done the night before was kind of found a trail to get in there. And I wasn't really worried about spooking the bird because I knew where he went. And I found a spot, cleared it out. And then when I went back in the morning, I put a stick out there so I knew exactly where it was, got set up, and, you know, sat there for probably, 25 minutes, and off he went. And he was on private property, which I knew he was. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be a bit of a challenge. So, you know, I called to him, you know, did light tree yelps and just got him gobbling. He hit the ground, got him to gobble a couple more times, and then I can hear the hen yelping. I'm like, okay, this is going to be a bit of a challenge. So then he shut up. And I just kept calling. And I could hear her yelping, but he wasn't gobbling, so I knew he was with her. So I'm like, okay, well, we're going to make this happen here. So I cut him real hard, like really hard and really loud, and he gobbled. I'm like, okay, I think I got his attention now. And 10 minutes later, he walks out into this opening. And it seemed like forever for this bird to get to me. And he came across the opening. I'm sitting in an edge of a tree line. And he comes across the field. And he's to my left, which is perfect. But he walks across the field, and I don't know where he went. And I'm like, okay, I know what this bugger's going to do. He's a big, smart bird. And he's going to walk into the woods. And he's going to try and come back to my left, which I have absolutely no shot because it's so thick in there, I can't even see. And I'm waiting. And, you know, I just keeping my eye right where it's the last time I saw him. And all of a sudden, boom, he's right there. I mean, I can see his head coming through these branches. And Randy, he's like, he came and he knew exactly where I was because he was looking right at me. And he was like 10 yards.
Oh, wow.
And I let him have it. But he didn't make a sound. He never gobbled. He took his time. He wasn't in any hurry. I knew it was a mature bird because sometimes those young ones, the younger birds, if they know, they make a beeline.
Yeah.
And he didn't run towards me. He ran just like straight opposite direction and came back at me along the tree line to keep himself somewhat hidden. You know? And biggest bird I ever shot.
That's a great deal.
Yeah.
That is. 10 yards, that had to leave a mark.
Yeah, he flopped around for quite a bit. But, okay. Yeah, he was 10.5-inch beard, inch and a quarter spurs.
Wow.
Here's what the kicker was. He was 27.6 pounds.
It's a giant.
It's huge.
That's a giant bird.
I mean, when I went to pick him up, and then I had to haul his rear all the way out. I'm like, oh, my God, if I don't have a heart attack while I'm doing this, I'll be surprised. But when you get that adrenaline going like that,
you can do it.
Yeah, and I when you're running and gunning like that and you're hunting on public property, you can't haul a lot of stuff in with you. I'm like, I'm not taking a no decoy.
That's what that was my next question. Do you use decoys for any of your hunts?
I did. I used a Jake and a lay down hen for the first one.
Okay.
Because I figured I could get a subordinate in with that type of setup with a Jake. But the second one I used absolutely no decoy whatsoever because I didn't, and I knew he was an adult bird, and they're not the easiest to fool. And sometimes when they see, you know, where I was hunting in an opening, if they see that, they're gonna do is strut and go back and forth,
yep,
and not commit.
Right.
And he didn't know. He knew right where I was, but he couldn't see me, so yeah. He had to keep coming. So, moral of the story is don't give up. If you see him and they shut up, just get ready.
Be ready, right?
You know, I think the days of them gobbling their heads off are gone, because once they find those hens, they, unless you can get them fired up, and I'm gonna say, I'm not a great caller, but I'm a good caller. Mm-hmm. I know what to use.
Yep.
I hit him as hard as I could with a slate call, and that got him to gobble one more time. I'm like, okay, I got his attention.
It's almost like a shock gobble.
It was, and I go, I think he's coming, because it sounded a lot closer than it had before. And, it was rewarding for a lot of different reasons. Going back old school, textbook, scout, set up, be patient, no decoy.
That's good though, and I've cut back on the decoys quite a bit as well. Do you name your decoys?
No,
they don't have names.
Okay. No, I don't do that, and I've got way too many. As a matter of fact, I'm taking a lot of them up to my cottage for next weekend for a rummage sale. I probably have 13 decoys, of which I don't use a lot. I've tried different things, and you know, over the years I've experimented. You know, a hen lay down, a feeding hen, upright hen, full strut tom, Jake and a hen. I've tried all kinds of things and had success with all of them. But I think when you're hunting these bigger birds, you almost have to reevaluate, you know, whether you want to use a decoy or not. Because right. If they see it, they'll hang up. And I've got so much video of birds I didn't get, big birds, that hung up at 50 yards.
Because of the decoy. That's interesting.
So little helpful hint there. But yeah, back old school. That's what we used to do when I first started hunting. Is like, okay, you have to make stuff happen. You know, there was no way I could get up and move. There was no way. So I had to commit to my spot, work the bird, and hope for the best.
So let's talk about after the shot. So when you get them home, how do you prepare? Is there anything? Do you do all your birds the same? Do you prepare them the same? Do you do something different? Do you use the legs?
It's about for me to clean my bird, it's an hour and a half, sometimes a 2-hour project, because I'm very methodical.
Are you plucking?
No, I skin them, but I cut all of the silver skin. I clean all of the stuff out of it. I check for BBs. And when you clean one of those things, they got this big sack.
Yeah.
You know, and if
that's disgusting.
It's disgusting. And I try to cut around that so I don't, because once the air comes out of it, it just like turns into this like gelatinous, ugly material.
Yeah.
And I am very methodical about cleaning everything up. I'll cut the legs off and then kind of just start from where the leg is and just peel that down. Clean the tendons out of it, use all of that stuff. And, you know, the wings, I really don't mess around with too much. You know, you can get a couple small pieces out of there, but I'm very methodical about cutting it the right way.
Yes.
Cleaning it.
Yep.
Getting it packaged properly. So it's a lengthy process.
It's a process, is right. It took me a while as well, and I took my time. But it's interesting because a lot of guys don't save the drumsticks or anything. And my nephew Dustin, he kind of got me onto this. He takes those drumsticks and he puts them in a crock pot, mm-hmm. just lets them cook all day. And then he's got a recipe for turkey leg tacos. He shreds that stuff and just, he said it's fantastic. I mean, really good. So there's a lot of ways you can do your turkey, but you hit it on the head. The main thing is to clean it. Take your time, clean it right, because it will taste better.
Yeah, and I'm one of those guys that, you know, I save some of the feathers because I do antler art, and every one of my pieces has a feather on it of some kind.
Yep.
And if you look at a bird, one of the most phenomenal things about a turkey, and you don't get to examine this until you actually harvest one, is how many different iridescent colors they have and how the sun hits it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's blue or it's copper or it's black or it's brown. You have all of these colors in these birds. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me. And one of the things that I do is I do this with every animal, that I've harvested for as long as I can remember is, you know, there's a respect that goes along with that. I mean, but I'm, you know, like my turkeys, I kneel on the ground, I put my hand on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just grateful to have that opportunity. Every deer that I've harvested that I can remember, I've done the same thing. There's just that attachment that I have to these animals because, you know, obviously I'm, you know, out there and I'm harvesting them, and I don't ever want to be disrespectful.
Correct.
To any animal that you know I've gone out and harvested, and it's just one of those things that it's important to me. Not some people go, yeah, okay, I think you're full of hooey, whatever, that's crazy, but it is to me, and I think everybody has their own idea of how they show respect, but that's mine. Are we ready for a break? All right, well, listen, we're gonna go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Jurek. Thanks for tuning us in. If you want to touch base with us or communicate with us, it's Caller text line is 920-281-1570 or 866-653-1570. Or you can email me at livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Instagram. I've gotten back in the groove with posting up Throwback Thursdays. Found some more classic pictures for you guys to laugh at and get a good kick out of. So Randy Bracktrop's joining me here in the studio, and you know, you're texting back and forth about topics, and you came up with a pretty good one, so I think you need to share that with us.
Well, I thought we could switch it up a little. I could talk turkey all show.
Oh,
tonight,
absolutely.
You know? But let's go out to the fishing aspect here a little bit. And I've always wanted to do this for hunting licenses, do a comparison around the United States to mm-hmm. see state to state what was what. So I thought I'd just take a quick look at fishing licenses and the cost of them for just Wisconsin and our neighboring states, Minnesota, Michigan, and Illinois. That's just for you, Alex. Illinois. We included Illinois just for you. So if you had to take a guess on out of those four states, which state do you think overall has the cheapest fishing license?
Of the ones you mentioned,
yes.
Including Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois.
I'd guess Wisconsin.
I'm going to guess Minnesota.
And you'd both be wrong. Illinois.
Oh, wow.
Really?
That's surprising.
Illinois is a bargain. Oh, my God.
Do you even have any place to fish down
well,
there?
Well, that is my question to Alex. I don't really know. Is Illinois, do they have a lot of lakes? Do they have
Lake Michigan, the Mississippi River.
And that's it?
Maybe that's why
they're so cheap.
They're very small. They're very small
okay.
lakes. Yeah, I mean, obviously you have two main bodies of water with the Mississippi and Lake Michigan, but I couldn't name a big lake off the top of my head. A lot of rivers and streams in like northern Illinois, but
right.
If you'd have to go downstate to see a lot more lakes and water.
Well, on the flip side, who do you think is the most expensive of the three left?
It's got to be Minnesota because they have the most land.
Yeah, okay.
That's exactly what I would have thought, but it's Michigan.
Okay.
Go figure.
Go
yeah,
figure.
Yeah, that surprised me. So in Wisconsin, an annual residential license, $20. Minnesota, $25. Michigan, $26. And Illinois, $15.
Wow. Right.
For the non-resident.
Here we go.
Here we go is right. Non-resident Wisconsin, annual $50. Minnesota, $51. Michigan, $76.
Ouch.
Yeah, what is it about that? I have to look
lot.
Into that. Mm. And Illinois, $31.50. Boy, you guys are great.
$31.50. Okay, who
for
came
a non-resident.
Up? What, is that 50 cents going to some fund for?
You wonder, they tack that.
To the
they
toll
probably
road,
yeah. help pay the for the green roads. Dye they dump in the Chicago River every year.
Seems like every
just eyeballing this on Wikipedia, I would say there's probably over 100 lakes in Illinois, the state of Illinois. So there's a lot more than we think, actually.
Not as
in,
many as
in Minnesota. They
no,
say what,
no,
10,000?
10,000.
No, it's nowhere near that, but there's more than I thought.
Interesting.
Right. So for Wisconsin, they offer a senior license when you're 65 and older. That's for an annual, that's $7. Now Minnesota, they don't really offer that. They when from age 16 to 89, you're paying for your license. Period. For Michigan, for the seniors, it's $11, and for Illinois, it's $13.50.
Hmm.
As far as the states that offer lifetime fishing license, this is interesting too. Wisconsin still working on that.
Sure,
they haven't come through with that. Minnesota offers it, but it's based on your age. So the older you get, the lower the cost is. You cannot do it online. You have to go through an application process. And so I guess if you're 80 years old, it's going to be quite a bit cheaper than if you're 20.
Still, your best bet is Wisconsin. I mean, there's so many options.
Oh, agreed.
You know,
Michigan offers a combo lifetime hunting and fishing for $1,025.
Whoa.
Would you do that if you were starting off again?
I would if I was young enough.
Okay.
Because you figure if you're going to, you know, for me, because that's what I love to do.
The problem is when you're that young, you don't have $1,000.
Yeah, well, no, not if you want to drink beer.
Exactly. That's the problem.
Right.
So when I read the senior offer for Illinois, it seemed a little more expensive, but that is actually, that gives them a sportsman's hunting license and a fishing license for $1,350.
Wow. That changes things.
Yeah, that's cheap. That's cheap. Illinois also has a lifetime fishing license, $435. Should be able to get your money out of that, I would think. And they also offer a lifetime hunting and fishing combo for $765. So again, if you're 20, 30, probably get your money out of that.
Well, it depends on how they decipher all of that. Do you have to pay for, is that hunting general? Is that deer hunting? Is that small game hunting? Is that waterfall hunting? What does that all include under the hunting umbrella?
Yeah, and it's all laid out. It's pretty easily defined. It's just a lot to go through online. Like, you can take a deep dive into this stuff.
I'm looking at you. I'm like, oh, my God, look at that.
Yeah, there's every state.
It's like War and Peace.
It was a lot. I mean, it's a lot. But everything is defined, and it's easily to follow. But I was just curious as to, so as far as comparison-wise, you know, and they're all fairly close, but Michigan comes out as the most expensive, and Illinois is the least expensive. Now, every state offers some type of discount, and some, I don't know which state it was, doesn't even charge at all if you are active military or a veteran.
Yeah.
So they all have this. Every state also offers just a lot more than what we touched on tonight, but it's just an interesting comparison, and I would like to kind of do the same, pick out some states for the fall and just do the hunting.
I think that's a great idea, just to get a baseline of, you know, all of these states, because obviously, you know, Michigan, there's great hunting there. There's great hunting in Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin. You know, it'd be interesting to see. You know, and then throw in some of the out west stuff, which is usually on the higher end of the spectrum.
Very high. And I know a lot of people bark because...
It should be, though.
Yep.
That is true. But for our Wisconsin whitetail season, you know, I mean, we're pretty reasonable, I believe, for non-resident.
First, the opportunities that you have and the amount of deer that are here. I mean, because, you know, I'll throw my cents in for all the Midwestern states like Iowa and Minnesota and all that jazz. But, all right, well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life. The facts of life.
Welcome back. Fleet Farms Living Outdoor Show here on The Score. Yes, it is. Fun facts time. Although, there's a bit of a change up. I have them this time.
Yes, I am so excited for this.
It's, I know, Randy's always the one to come up with the fun facts, and he does a phenomenal job. I was going to go ahead and put my own 2 cents worth and have a bunch of them, and he's like, well, we'll just save mine till next time, and you can do yours. So...
Actually, before you ask your question, that song, what show was that from again?
The Facts of Life.
Okay, well, that's a really stupid question. What years did that run? Do you guys know?
I want to say 80s.
Okay. I would say early 80s. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. Tootie.
Tootie, Blair, Natalie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's scary that you know all their
Mrs.
names.
Mrs. Garrett.
Oh, my gosh. George Clooney was in this? Am I seeing this right?
I don't know. Maybe you are.
TV series?
He was in it.
Oh, my God!
They all thought he was dreamy.
Holy. 201 episodes.
What year was that?
1979 to 1988.
Oh, there you go. So
it did start. Were right.
We're close.
George
anyway.
Clooney. Wow. Sorry. Go ahead. I digress.
I digress. I got a bunch of fun facts about the month of May.
Okay. Nice.
So are you guys into the you know, astro, you know, like having your sign.
Zodiacs
and all that. You into that stuff?
I am not personally, but no. I'm willing
right, well,
to listen.
If you were born in the month of May, then your zodiac sign is Taurus, which is May 1st through the 20th, or Gemini.
Oh, nice.
May 21st to the 31st.
Okay.
People born under the Taurus and Earth sign are known to be intelligent, dependable, and stubborn. All right. People born under the Gemini and Air sign are known to be whimsical, talkative, and adaptable.
Wow. My wife falls into the Taurus, and that basically describes her perfectly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
It is funny how some of them, I used to read it all the time.
Yeah.
Then it started to not make sense or make me think it was something it wasn't. So, okay. The Run for the Roses. Anybody know what that is?
Is that Preakness? No.
No, that's
the Derby.
Oh, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, the Derby. That was just on.
Right in front of my face. Yeah, dummy.
First Saturday in May every year.
I overthought it.
That was a good one, too, this year.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. I didn't watch it.
15-1.
I was busy cleaning my shotgun, but.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest horse races in the world and has been running every year since 1875. However, there have been only 2 years when the race wasn't ran in May. 1945, obviously we know that.
Yep.
The war.
Yeah.
And then 2020.
Yep, because I think they ran it in, did they run, what month?
September.
September, yep. Yeah.
That's an interesting
fact. They delayed
it
until September.
I couldn't remember. Dang.
There you go. Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cinco de Drunco.
Yes.
Many people think it's about, margaritas and partying. The origins of the early celebration is an 1862 Mexican victory over the French during the Second Franco-Mexican War. And here's another interesting tidbit to that. Here's Americans spend over $600 million each year on beer for Cinco de Mayo. That's more than the Super Bowl or St. Patrick's Day.
Wow.
$600
million? $600 That's
million. That's a stat right there that is mind-blowing.
$600 million. That's a lot of suds.
And the fact that it's over the Super Bowl. Yeah.
And St. Patrick's Day.
That's hard to believe.
That's hard to believe. Well, you look at the racetrack alone there. What is there? How many people was there? 100,000 people or better? Maybe more at
the Kentucky Derby?
At the Derby. You're talking about Cinco de Mayo, though. Yeah. Okay, so for Cinco de Mayo, everybody just, whether you have any connection to it or not, everybody just celebrates it.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Let's have a taco and a beer.
Yep.
The month of growth. The name May originated from the Latin word Maius, named after the Greek goddess of growth, or maybe it's Maya. If I pronounce it wrong, somebody call and correct me. So it's no surprise that May is the most common month for gardeners to start planting seeds in their flower beds and gardens. In some locations, it is considered to be bad luck to start planting before the third weekend in May for fear of a late spring frost.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's always, we spend tons of money on flowers, and Mother Nature throws you a snowball.
We could get a little cold tonight. I don't know how
it could
cold,
be. The 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you were born in May, then your birthstone is the vibrant, deep green emerald.
Ooh, I like that.
There you go. Emeralds have the same green shade as thriving spring garden, and in French, the name emerald is, I'm just going to say jardin, literally the French word for garden.
Okay.
Probably mispronounced that right, but that's why I never took a foreign language.
How is it again? Chardy?
Yeah, let's say that. Sardines.
Chardy.
Let's just get rid of the J and supplement it with an S.
Sardines. That sounds
there
great.
We go. Spring clean for the May Queen. Led Zeppelin sings about her Stairway to Heaven. Florence Pugh becomes her in the horror film Midsummer. But what is the May Queen anyway? Anybody know?
I could not tell you.
She is, in paganism, the Mary Queen is the goddess of spring who would be awakened each year to fight the Winter Queen to allow nature to return to bloom and blossom and provide its bounty.
We need that queen in like April, too.
Yeah,
that'd
the
be
queen
great.
The queen
I
took
was
a
about
beating
to say,
this
I think,
early.
Yeah, I mean, they were duking it out there for a little while. they each got some bumps and bruises.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
This year. My goodness.
And let's see what's I come up with one more here. Oh, May the 4th be with you.
Yes.
Or the 5th.
Star Wars.
May the 5th. That was great. I love that text.
Yes.
Just Yoda with a fifth of bourbon or something, wasn't it?
That's pretty good.
May the 5th be with you. Perfect. May 4th is widely hailed as Star Wars Day, a play of words on the popular line, May the Force be with you. Did you know that the famous phrase is said in each of the Star Wars movies, but has only been uttered 24 times in total during the Star Wars franchise.
Hmm.
It's really not as many as you'd think.
I would have thought a lot more.
Well, that's like every time they say that, but that seems to me to be a low number, but I'm going with what the facts are.
Yeah, it's, and you got them on the internet?
Yes. Well, we know that everything's true on the internet. True.
You're set.
Yep.
All right. All right. Well, listen, Randy, it's great. Obviously, thank you again. I know I called on you to do this quick, but I wanted to talk the turkey stories while it was still going on. So
it was my pleasure.
Congratulations. What a great story. I loved hearing it.
Thank you, and you as well.
Yeah. All right. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for tuning us in tonight. Always be glad to be in this chair, sharing my love for the outdoors with you. And remember, if you have the opportunity to impact somebody's life through the outdoors, please take advantage of it. I guarantee you, it will change your life. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Have a great evening and live life in the outdoors.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.